Welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Stories of Determination. I'm your host, Betsy Graziani Fassbender. Like in nature, we see determined flowers and vines clinging to life and seeking light, so are Morning Glory people. And in this podcast, I'll interview writers, activists, artists, entrepreneurs, survivors and thrivers, and trailblazers of all kinds. These are folks that have been determined to get over, under, around, and through the obstacles that face them, or to seize the opportunities that come before them. I find these people inspiring and amazing. I know you will too. Today on the Morning Glory Project, I'm really happy to welcome USA Today and national best-selling author Anna J. Stewart. She writes sweet to sexy romance for the Harlequin's heart-roaming and romantic suspense lines. Early obsessions with Star Wars, Star Trek, and Wonder Woman set her on a path to creating fun, funny, and family-centric romances with happily ever afters for her independent heroines. Former RWA Golden Heart nominee and 2018 Daphne du Maurier finalist, her heartwarming book Recipe for Redemption was recently optioned for a TV movie, aired on Up TV during the 2019 holiday season. Since her first novella with Harlequin in 2014, Anna has written and published, wait for it, more than 40 romances in multiple subgenres. Anna lives in Northern California, where she deals with a serious supernatural and Jason Momoa addiction and surrounds herself with friends and family. You can read more about Anna and her books and the workshops she offers at www.authorannastewart.com. Anna, I'm so glad to welcome you to the Morning Glory Project. Thanks for making this time for us.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
I met you some 15 years ago, and at that time, you were the president of the local chapter of, which is called Sacramento Valley Rose, a subchapter of the National Romance Writers of America. And I joined that group not because I'm a romance writer, but because you women know how to get books written, and you really study your craft, and you also study the promotions, and I just had lots to learn, and I entered that group. And you were at that time the president of RWA, but you had at that time not written a single book, to my knowledge.
I had. I gotten serious about it. I was playing at writing at that point.
Okay, so you were just playing, you were dabbling at that point, which is where lots of writers start. No harm, no foul,
right.
No criticism there. But I'm wondering, you know, now, less than 15 years later, you have 40 books and a movie out. And I got fascinated with that idea. Whether listeners, if you write or if you produce music or you're an entrepreneur starting a business, I wanted to talk with Anna about how she got from dabbling to 40 books and a movie and what it took her to get there. That's my agenda today. So can you tell me a little bit about that transition for you? What did you have to do to move from dabbler to producer?
I had to make a decision of how badly I wanted it. When we first met, like you said, I was president of the local chapter, and I was also working full-time as an author assistant to Brenda Novak, who had her diabetes auction at the time, and I helped run that. So I honestly kind of jam-packed my life full of stuff other than writing, even though writing was the dream. And it was a dream I, you know, started back in high school when I discovered writing and I discovered romance novels. So it came to a point where I had to make a decision as I was getting older of how long I was going to keep playing and dreaming and not doing. And when Brenda Novak ended her auction, it was an opportunity for me to finally say, now's the time. And right after that, we held a chapter retreat in Monterey, and we had a session at the end of the weekend where our speaker, who's the fantabulous Mary Buckham, who I just adore, had us all do a meditation exercise and imagine where we would be in 5 years. And she added, imagine where you are in 5 years and you're not published. And that to me was my aha moment. I said, I am not getting to another 5 years and not publish a book. And at the time, I was still very focused on New York. I wanted traditional New York publishing. I am not one for indie publishing. I think it's a great medium. It is not a great medium for me. It's far too much work and I just want to write the books. So, and do whatever promotion I have to do. So after that retreat, that was kind of when everything kind of went on fast forward, and I dug down and I dug out the paranormal urban fantasy romance that I had always felt was kind of it, or at least would be my next step. And I entered it in the National RWA's Golden Heart Contest, and it finaled. And from there, I got my first agent. And from my first agent, I got my second agent. And then right after that, I sold to Harlequin with a novella. 3 months after that, I sold to Berkeley with Contemporary because my paranormal didn't go anywhere. It was literally like having a switch flip in my brain that I could not go much longer without at least trying to achieve the goals I'd set for myself.
It sounded like that meditation was also almost like a little mini crisis. Like, oh no.
Yes.
Oh no, 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 no. No, not 5 years. So just envisioning 5 more years of not doing it was a catalyst.
Oh yeah, it was panic inducing. It was absolute panic inducing. I'm like, how much longer can I just sit here and spin my wheels? You know, I'd been chapter president multiple times. I'd done every job for the chapter that was available, except treasury. Nobody wants me handling any money. but it was almost as if I was finding excuses not to do the writing.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to ask you. I encountered this with a lot of creative and imaginative people, is that we sometimes fill up our day with obligations around the, we sort of nibble at the edges of what we want to do. So we join writers groups or we attend conferences, none of those things being bad things, mind you. But if we fill up all of our time with that, and volunteering and being the president of a chapter of a writing organization, it's a lot of time.
It is.
It's details. It's tons of communications. It's all that stuff. So I was there at the meeting that was your last, your first retirement from the from the post. So tell me what you did then. Once you kind of got it, like, I want to do this, that was the big decision. What were the subsequent decisions you had to make that possible?
That the writing had to come first.
Before what?
Before everything. Now, I don't know if I'm fortunate. I'm in a unique position. I'm not married. I don't have children. I have cats, little grenades with feet. and I have an elderly mother who lives with me, or I live with her because I never moved out. But I'm in a unique situation where I can say the writing comes first. Mm. Hats off to every author out there who is balancing so much more than I am. And I was very lucky that I was able to salt away some money while I was working, that I could take a couple of years and focus on the writing and not have to work outside the home. Because I think really, if I had to work outside the home, I could not have produced what I produced. And the authors and the writers who do continue to do that while writing the day job, they are heroes in my eyes, because I don't know how to do anything other than what I'm doing. So it was literally a shift of mindset that while everything else had come first before, now the writing was going to come first, which is probably why I'm a morning writer. You know, I have my breakfast and then I sit down at the computer and I usually get up at about 1 o'clock and I'm done for the day. But the writing is first, because that's the job, that's the dream, and that's what I need to keep going for.
And that means it's first before volunteer activities, before fun lunches with friends, mm-hmm. before what else? What else takes second, specifically?
I was going to say going out with my friends, when I'm scheduling certain events that I know are going to happen in the future, I make sure it's not when I'm right up close to deadline. Everything I decide to do in my life, I have to look at my schedule first and see where I am on a particular project. So it's just the mindset of, okay, where is this going to fall in line with what I have to produce? And that's why I have very dog-eared calendars sitting on my desk under my laptop. So when an email comes in and can you do this, or we need to schedule this, the first thing I do is look and see where my word count is for a project, because I keep track of that on my calendar, and whether or not it's going to send me into panic mode to lose a day. And I'm also one of those writers where if I have one thing that throws me off, it throws me off for the day.
So you have to go down into the tunnel. You've got to really get into the zone, eliminate the distractions, focus on the writing.
Exactly. And part of that is the cell phone stays at the other end of the house. The laptop that does go online gets turned off because the internet is a very happy distraction. Well, I shouldn't say happy distraction. It's a distraction.
Well, wait, so let me clarify that. You have one laptop that has internet access, but you put that away during your writing?
I do. I close it up. I turn it off. I close it up. And I write on a 20-year-old laptop that has no virus protection and no internet access, meaning it's only a word processor. So that is when I hit the zone. So if I can get there by 8:30 in the morning, I'm usually good for my word count that I hope to get every day.
Wow. You know, it's funny. I've long known in my soul that multitasking is a myth, that it doesn't really exist, that what people that think that they're multitasking are really just toggling really quickly between other distracting things. And if they think they're good at it, it's just that they're able to kind of get back on task easier than some of us.
Yes.
But they're rendering both tasks less efficient.
Yes.
So you are an example of somebody who's just really said, no, I'm going to make this a singular task. I'm going to eliminate those distractions. I'm going to commit the time. I'm going to commit the focus. And just dedicate yourself to getting it done. You know, it also strikes me that you made a financial dedication too, that you had saved some dough a little bit. You're not an heiress, I'm gathering.
No.
Nor did you have somebody else supporting you. I mean, you live with your mom and I'm sure you share whatever expenses you share, but it's not like you were independently wealthy and could do this indefinitely. So you made a real commitment to, I'm sure, or I'm guessing, to live modestly, to give some of those things up too while you were dedicating to getting books written and all of that?
Well, it was, yeah, but I've never been a real extravagant person I shouldn't say that. Certain things I spend money on, but I'm more conscious about what I spend money on. In the last couple of years, I've probably spent too much money on travel, going to conferences, because conferences are freakishly expensive. I try to justify it by saying, hey, it's a tax write-off, but it's still money I have to pay out. So I told myself, you have to make this work or you're going to have to go back to work. And I don't want to go back to work. I did 25 years in retail. Mm. You know, I did, I've worked at a bookstore. I've worked in a cookie shop. I've worked at a dollhouse store. And I did the assistant thing for Brenda for about 7 or 8 years. But I don't want to, this is going to sound horrible. I don't want to deal with people. I like my worlds. I like my creations. And I like losing myself with these characters. And I find that fulfilling enough that I don't really do a whole lot of other stuff. Now I go on, you know, one or two vacations with my girlfriends every once in a while. But other than that, I go to the movies occasionally. There isn't a whole lot I have to spend money on. That said, as long as I stay off of Amazon, I can stay within my budget. But, you know, between books and streaming services, that's probably where my money goes.
Yeah. So, Anna, I'm wondering what obstacles came up as you started to dedicate, because I think of this in two ways. I heard Barbara Streisand once say, and I think she was quoting someone else whom I cannot credit. She said, at the time of commitment, the universe conspires to support you. And there's part of me that believes that, but I also know that sometimes at the time of commitment, the universe conspires to put a whole bunch of obstacles in your way to challenge that commitment. It seems like both things are simultaneously contradictory and true. So I'm wondering what resistance or obstacles did you face to your new dedication when you decided to do that?
Well, a couple of things. I think one of the things I realized when I got serious about the writing was that I had been suffering from a horrible case of the fear of success. I knew how to fail. I knew how to submit stuff to agents and editors and have it get rejected and, go back to edits and rewrite it to this agent's ideas or rewrite it to this editor's ideas or, you know, whatever. I knew how to get, I knew that circle intimately. But once I decided to look for the success, and the achieving of the goals that I had set for myself, it took a while to be able to break free of that unknown. Because fear of the unknown is crippling. It can be absolutely crippling.
What did you fear?
How things would change. Now, when you're playing at writing, it's fun. You get to do whatever you want. You don't have to worry about somebody telling you. And keep in mind, I'm speaking from somebody looking for traditional publishing, indie publishing, everything. You know, you get to do whatever you want anyway. But with traditional publishing, you have to set, you have to find the parameters that somebody else has defined.
And that's particularly true in the romance world too. There are very specific expectations of each of the lines they have. You'd know better than I, but what I came to understand was that Harlequin has their sweet line where these are the kind of mores and expectations, and then they have their supernatural that they tolerate this or that. So you had to follow those kinds of things, meet those expectations.
Yes, but I think Harlequin gets a bad rap for that too, because really what defines their different lines are the reader expectations. Mm-hmm. With the romantic suspense line, there's a lot of adventure, there's a lot of action. With the heartwarming line that I write for, it's very sweet. They're very, you know, Hallmark movie type, just with a lot more emotional conflict than mm-hmm. they put on the screen.
Right.
So each line has a different expectation for their readers. And I think a lot of misconception about Harlequin authors is that it's formulaic, that they tell you what to write, that it's very easy. No, because you still have to have a voice that is distinctive, that stands out. And honestly, I have never had an editor, and granted, I've only really had two at Harlequin, but I've never had an editor tell me, we want you to be this kind of author. Like, you have to write Secret Babies, or you have to write Marriage of Convenience. And I knew going in, I was not going to be a fit for that kind of business model. They're not that kind of business model. I think once you're established, there's a certain reader expectation for your type of book. But really what the reader's buying is your voice. And one reason I'm very happy with Harlequin is that they have opened doors for me when I've wanted to try something different. You know, going from the heartwarming line to romantic suspense, that's a big jump and that's a huge difference. But fortunately, they've really helped me find a way to appeal to both readers and to bring the readers of both to the other lines. So that whole fear of success thing, I think, was really at its root a fear of change. And I've gone from, oh, I get to do this whenever I want to do it, to I have to do this every day because it's my job.
So that's the transition. It went from hobby or sidebar to your work.
Yes.
That you took as seriously as if you were suiting up, going into an office or and a place of employment and punching a clock.
Absolutely.
Did you get any resistance from friends, from loved ones, from your community, family members?
You know what? No. I have never once had, and it's a shocker to me because I hear horror stories of people who either their spouses or their parents or their friends, when are you going to write a real book? I'm looking at my book. It is real. But I've never once had anybody say that to me. And it makes me so grateful, but it also breaks my heart for, especially for women who want to write romance, thinking that their work is somehow not worthy simply because it's focused on relationships and emotions. And that's really what romance is. It is focused on relationship and emotions, something we all deal with every single day of our lives. So the idea that it's somehow less than, when it is something that encompasses the majority of our lives, is just so enraging to me.
You know, it's interesting, as you talk, I'm remembering a speaker at one of the Sacramento Valley Rose meetings, who was a professor, I think, and she taught English at a college, and her colleagues had published their very esoteric tomes, and she had published romance, and she'd published her third or fourth, I think, and there was a lot of bigotry, if for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. there was a little bit of a snooty quality among her colleagues, like she was writing romance, you know, hold one's nose and all of that. And she quoted herself and said, she turned to them and simply said, how many people do you think actually read your textbooks? I know that my book gets read about a dozen times each time people pass it among their friends, and I've got a lot of readers. And I've thought about that ever since, and I've thought, you know, whatever genre preference I or you may have, you're writing books that you want to read and that readers want to read. And that's exciting. Your storytelling in the fashion that pleases that audience. And I've gotten a lot less snooty about it, I have to tell you. And I've been so inspired.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten really inspired. Well, and because I was one of those people, I'm going to confess to you that I was one of those people that had that assumption that there was a formula and that you just kind of clocked it in, you know. And when I met this group of amazing women writers, I was thinking, wow, I was sure wrong. These women work at their craft. And I was just really impressed. But my question was about resistance from others, not so much judgment about what you were writing, but sort of people saying, oh, come on, can't you lighten up? Can't you just take this trip? Or can't you just go at this time? Or, you know, there's this special brunch. Can't you join us? That kind of pushback on your dedication.
I don't really recall getting all of that, because if I know enough about it ahead of time, then I can make allowances and I can readjust my schedule down the road. Mm. Now, if I think it's something that's going to take me 2 or 3 days away and I've got a deadline in a week, that's going to be a no. But I know that I also surrounded myself with people who understand that. And I'm trying to think of anybody who would even ask me to do that.
Well, perhaps I'm asking the wrong person. You're a person who knows yourself so well, and you're so clear about who you are and what you want, that perhaps that just fends off the kinds of people that would interfere.
It could very well be. It's probably who I've chosen to surround myself with. Now, I've chosen to surround myself with a lot of writers and a lot of romance writers, so they all get it. You know, some of my best friends are writers, and my absolute best friend is not, but I've known her for going on 30 years now. So she's known me from the beginning. She's known that this has been the dream. So she knows that this is what my main obligation is. So she would never ask me to push back on that. And if we make plans to do something, like, she's usually my travel buddy, we usually plan things like a year in advance if we're going to be going somewhere. So, it just works. Also, I'm not probably an easy person to try to push around.
That was the nature of my comment.
I was going to say, you probably know this about me, Betsy, but I'm a little bit of a B word. So if somebody pushes hard at me at something, I'm darn well going to push back, and that person isn't going to be happy. So I guess I might be an anomaly in that I don't get a lot of pushback. I think I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate in my support system, the people I've chosen to surround myself with. I mean, I've got tons of cheerleaders, and I've never had one naysayer, which I am exceedingly grateful for, because confidence is a big player in this business. You have to have the confidence to keep going.
So I'm wondering, Anna, if the resistance or pushback or whatever is not from without, I wonder how you keep yourself going if there are times when you reach a hard wall. And I'm not talking about a creative, you have clearly an infinite number of ideas and all of that. But when you reach a spot of being either discouraged or frustrated, or is this one going to work, or you've gotten a rejection, or how do you get through those disappointments or setbacks?
A number of years ago, I'm still in a critique group with two of my best writer friends, but we had a group called the Tiny Killer Bees. There's a whole story behind the name of our critique group, but suffice it to say, we called ourselves the TKBs, and there were about six of us in the group. Three of us have now stopped writing, which is really sad, but three of us remain. We had a rule that we set forth rules before we even started critiquing is, if you get a rejection, you get to sulk for 24 hours. You can drink as much wine as you want. You can eat as much chocolate. But when that 24 hours is up, you're done and you're moving on. So that is the rule I live by. And, you know, even after almost 40 books, I'm still getting rejections. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I posted something on a Facebook page. I said, it does not matter how long you're in this business, rejection still sucks and it still hurts. And that's coming from me going back on the search for an agent, because I want to start branching out and I want to be writing bigger books. I love writing for Harlequin, but I also want to be writing bigger single title books. And that means going out to agents. So I've submitted this project that I'm absolutely in love with, and I have gotten the same feedback from three agents that all three agents are like dream agents for me, and they've all said the same thing. And I'm like, that's not right for the project. So I can't do that. So they're all, well, when you have something else, send it to me. And I'm like, oh my God. So even when you've achieved some level of success, that doesn't mean the road gets any easier. It gets a little steeper in a lot of ways. And it comes back to the whole, how bad do I want it? And what choices do I have to make?
I rather love your 24-hour whining and wine rule.
Yeah. Well, and I don't drink, so that makes it even easier, where it's just M&Ms for like 24 hours, and then I'm hopped up enough to write for a year without blinking. But you have to give yourself permission. It's almost like you're grieving, because you get your hopes so built up, like this is going to be the one, and this is going to take me to the next level. And then you get slapped back because somebody else who might be the guardian at the gate says, no, you're not getting in this way. So you have to find another way. And you have to try to decide whether or not it's worth looking through all the different ways, or whether you're going to shift your agenda and your plans to actually go down the path that you originally planned.
Yeah. Is this a dig down and force it through? Or is this a, wait a minute, I need to reevaluate and look and see if there's another way? Well, Anna, my last question here, what new book is coming out? How can people find out about you and about your books and discover what you've been up to?
All of my information is on my website, www.authorannastewart.com.
And Anna has two N's. A-N-N-A.
Yes, it does. Thank you. Most of my books are up there. I do have a number of books that I've written and have been published in various arenas, but are not currently available, like for Kindle Worlds and stuff like that. But upcoming on February 11th, I'm part of a box set of, we're going back to Christmas Town, which was actually my very first release from Harlequin, was a book called Christmas Actually. And it was a novella that I wrote in conjunction with Anna Adams and Melinda Curtis, took place in Christmas Town. Well, every year we've released a box set of more stories that take place in Christmas Town, only this time we're doing Valentine's Day. And it's ebook only, I believe, at this point, and it'll only be $1.99, and that's for a limited time. And then my next Harlequin release will be in April 1st, which is my 8th book in the Butterfly Harbor series, which all the books stand alone. They just have recurring characters who pop up, but the main story is it's a reunion. It's my first real reunion story of a couple, and their teenage daughter is very involved in making sure they get back together. So a little bit of a parent trap element there. And then my next romantic suspense will be out in October. And this one I'm actually really excited about. It was inspired by Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, and also by the movie Gaslight. So it has, it's kind of more of a, I want to say it's more of a romantic noir than the action part of it. So there's it was a lot of fun to write.
Anna, I don't think I can read as fast as you write. I'm delighted to talk. Yours is definitely a story of determination. And whether somebody is a writer or an artist or a creative or an entrepreneur, I know that some of the nuggets that you've shared with us today can be useful. Thank you so very much for being part of the Morning Glory Project. I wish you every single kind of success.
Thank you so much.
That high power conversation with Anna Stewart was jam-packed full of all kinds of extra blooms of inspiration. I was really touched by the fact that it was when she envisioned 5 years from now, at that retreat that she went to, 5 years from now, what if you're still not published? And that was the spark she needed. It's like, no, that's unacceptable. It seems so many times that when we have a creative idea, whether it's for an art we want to do, or travel even, or a business, something that we want to do, time just gets nibbled away. It just erodes. But when you really tell yourself, gosh, if I don't get on this 5 years from now, it'll be just the same, and I will be seriously bummed and will feel like I've failed at something. I was really inspired by that. And I was also really inspired by the fact that for the disappointments that come along the way, she and her companions have a little 24-hour rule. Yeah, you know, you get to bellyache about that and drink wine and eat chocolate if you must. But then you got to get back to work and do that again. There's something about that resiliency that is part of a lot of these conversations in the Morning Glory Project. A lot of people have shared some idea about something being discouraging and how they had to feel that for a bit, but then they had to get up and move on. What project are you thinking about? What goal do you have that you've been putting off? What idea has been floating around and climbing into your dreams and seeping into your conversation? What do you need to do to make it happen? Thanks so much for listening to the Morning Glory Project. As always, I'm honored by any time that you would give to this podcast because I know there are so many wonderful things out there to do. If you've enjoyed this episode, give us a like or a star or 5 stars, whatever you may feel inclined to do, and let other folks know about what we have here. I think it's worth listening to. And in the meanwhile, before our next episode, go out and bloom.